success.
A state across the nation, and it's a state.
Years ago, I took on every wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kicked every one of their asses. Their asses! Not because I was an asshole, no. Ask me, Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, if you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough ruthless aggression?
Yeah.
P-P-A, no info for the DEA. Federal agents mad cause I'm flagrant. Tap myself and the phone in the basement.
Welcome to the premiere episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, a deep dive into the ruthless aggression and brand extension era of WWE. So this is a new podcast here on the North-South Connection Podcast Network that I decided to take on. And just to give a quick introduction, the whole point of this podcast is sort of in the same vein as like Wrestling Warzone, another podcast on this network, is to kind of do a chronological deep dive into the ruthless aggression era of WWE. And the reason I think that it is a good period to cover is that, first of all, I don't think it's been extensively covered because I think until recently, most people probably wouldn't have thought of it as old enough or long enough in the past to really, I guess, look back on it or do any kind of retrospective. But as we've mentioned at other points on the North-South podcast network, this whole idea of recent vintage is something that's been going through our heads a lot, which is the idea of things that maybe don't seem quite as old as maybe wrestling that we watched in the 80s or something like that. But if we think about this, the ruthless aggression era is really, at this point, I mean, nearly 20 years old. So I think it's been enough time to look back on it. And I think it's also a really interesting time. It's basically at the point where WWF, or soon to be E, basically killed off all their competition, both in real life and kayfabe-wise after the invasion. So there was no WCW, there was no ECW left, really. So they really had no competition. So it's a little bit of uncharted waters for them, that there's no real competition. And we'll probably get to this as we go along in the timeline, that there are some hints of competition, but not anything that anybody's probably taken too seriously. So that is one thing that is unique, at least in the Vince era of WWE, is the idea of not having competition. And so really the whole crux of this, and what really is where I'm choosing to start the timeline, is going to be in the brand split era in 2002. So this first episode, we are going to cover the first draft on Raw on March 25th, 2002, the very first brand split draft in the following SmackDown episode on March 28th after that draft. And I chose this because I thought it was a good starting point, because I feel like this is what really kicks off this era, because this is something that's going to persist for the next few years. It's going to be that because they don't have competition from, say, WCW or some other company, they are now going to sort of be, or at least trying to put on the idea that they're competing with themselves by having Raw and SmackDown sort of be each their own brand. So I think it's something interesting. I don't think it's been covered a ton. And so I think it's an interesting place to examine. And also, I think now, given that we're in 2020, I think a lot of times we think of most people's fandom starting in maybe the mid to late 80s, or even for a lot of people in the early 90s, or maybe even the Attitude Era. But we're at the point where somebody could have been, if you were 12, 13 years old in 2002, you're about 30 now. So I think for a lot of people, this is an era for a lot of modern fans who are adults now. This is maybe like the era that they grew up in. Like, this is their 1987. So I think that's something interesting about this too. And so the way the podcast is going to work is each episode will basically cover that week's Raw and that week's SmackDown. Again, starting with what we'll start with on this episode is going to be the initial draft and the following SmackDown. And so each week, each episode, I'll cover the Raw and SmackDown from that week. And then when we get to pay-per-views, those will be standalone episodes. And what I decided to do, I will be the constant, but I thought it would be interesting to have a rotating guests. And I think I'm going to keep it to one guest per episode and kind of rotate around so I can get different perspectives on all this. And I'll sort of work as the host and the constant to keep track of everything along the way, so we can have a lot of different voices and various opinions on this. So without further ado, I will introduce my first guest on the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, which is somebody who actually sort of threw the idea out that this could be a podcast. He is Starkville's favorite son, Mr. Logan Crossland. How you doing, Logan?
I'm doing great, Jake. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. So, yeah, so you had kind of thrown out this idea, and that's why I thought it was appropriate to have you on as kind of the first guest. So can I ask you, what is kind of your history or background with this era? How familiar you are with it? What role did it play in your wrestling fandom, since it was sort of like something you threw out, like, man, I wish there was a podcast covering this era, because there doesn't seem to be one?
Well, yeah, I always just thought the Wrestling Warzone was such a great podcast. And this was, like you were talking about, this was the era where I really started watching. I was about 8 or 9 years old during this time. And this is really when I started watching the TV week to week. I'd watched tapes and old stuff that my brothers had up until this point, but this is really when I started watching week to week. And I know this era pretty well, so I just, you know, I thought it would be something good to cover. And, you know, with the documentary series coming out on the network recently, mm-hmm. I figured now is just as good a time as ever, you know. So
yeah, I definitely think it's fresh in people's minds right now with the documentary. And I'm interested to go back too, because I think for a lot of fans, they don't necessarily look back on it that fondly, I would say. Probably a lot of wrestling fans, I'm not saying you or I definitely remember this era, but the details are fuzzy to me. So that's why I'm interested to go back and really look at it in detail.
No, I didn't say anything. But okay. I think this era has its really bright spots, but it can get a little rough sometimes. So
yeah, it's definitely inconsistent, I would say. All right. So to not waste any more time, we'll jump right into it, because especially this first Raw with the draft is extremely jam-packed. There's a ton going on this episode. So all right, so we are live at Penn State. I guess this is like I'm assuming where the basketball team plays. They just didn't really say the arena. They just kind of mentioned that it was on the campus of Penn State.
Yeah, I would guess that's where the basketball team plays.
Yeah, and it's a pretty hot crowd. And one thing I noticed, I looked up on history of WWE, because I was interested to see how many dark matches are on here, because as we're going to get through, there's not a ton of wrestling, because so much time is taken up by the draft that there's not a ton of wrestling on here. So it's interesting to see, like, did they put a lot of dark matches? And they did have a few, nothing really to write home about. But one thing I found interesting is that Randy Orton did wrestle in a dark match against Justin Credible on this show, which I thought was interesting.
Wow. Yeah. It's hard to believe Justin Credible's still around at this point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm guessing he has a job due to his his connections.
With,
his buddies. So we start with the cold open. We have Linda on screen kind of sitting in her office to run down sort of the procedure of how the draft is going to work. And then we kind of get cuts to the entire WWF, still WWF at this time. We are not WWE, but that will be coming soon. They're all sitting around sort of in a, I guess, like almost like they would be in a meeting or something. They're all sitting kind of folding chairs, waiting anxiously to see. So Vince is going to be representing SmackDown. Ric Flair is going to be the GM to represent for Raw. And we get a few unique rules here, which is already, I think, starting to make this a little convoluted. And that, so we have Triple H, who is the undisputed champion. He cannot be drafted because he's the champ. Chris Jericho cannot be drafted, or Stephanie, because they will all be in a triple threat match tonight for the Undisputed Championship. So they cannot be drafted because the champion, the Undisputed Champion, cannot be drafted to one show because they have to be able to appear on both shows. So until they figure out which of those three will end up the champion, they cannot have them on one show. Also, Stone Cold Steve Austin cannot be drafted because of, I guess, I think they said it was contract. He's a free agent. It was very gray as to why he, do you remember exactly what they said? It was something like he's a free agent. He can't be drafted for whatever reason.
His lawyer wrote up a clause in his contract to say he could not be drafted to either, or he got to choose which brand he wanted to be on.
Yeah. And so that elicits some groans from the rest of the roster when that's announced by Linda, which is already kind of weird because you basically have arguably the top guy and he cannot be drafted, which kind of already takes a little bit of the wind out of the sails, I find, when you are, because that's your first question is, well, where's Stone Cold going to go? And they're telling us from the get-go, well, he's not getting drafted, almost like he's above it, which is kind of weird to start off with.
Yeah, I guess they wanted to build like a bidding war between Flair and McMahon to kind of stretch out a few weeks. But yeah, it is kind of convoluted, and it kind of, like you said, already takes the wind out of the sails a little bit.
Yeah. But overall, this introduction, I really liked. The thing I liked about it most is I kind of liked how they showed the entire roster kind of waiting around anxiously and sort of built the tension of it. I thought it did make it feel like a big deal. What did you think about this whole opening segment with Linda introducing the concept and the roster and everything?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool how they had the whole roster kind of in the same room, all sitting together. And, you know, I think Linda did a pretty good job of explaining the rules and how everything worked. But, yeah, I thought it was a pretty good segment.
Yeah. And so, again, we get introduced to what's the main event, which is going to be a triple threat for the Undisputed title, Stephanie, Triple H, and Jericho, with the stipulation that if Stephanie gets pinned, she is gone from the company. So we'll see. And this is a common thing that's been going on, I would say, probably since the late 90s, where they come in with this main event at the beginning of the show to try and keep you hooked for the entire show. Okay, so we come to the stage. We have podium set up where presumably this is where the two GMs are going to make their picks. I thought it was kind of weird that the show started with a match because we see the podiums, we get all this draft hype, but the first thing we see really is not going to be an actual draft pick. It is a match between Taz and Mr. Perfect. So Taz comes out. I always found that Taz in this era, he looked like he dressed like a mechanic to me. Like he looked like the Orange County Choppers guys or whatever, because he comes in with like the black coveralls. I always thought it was a kind of an odd look.
Yeah, I said he looked like he was about to go work on Undertaker's bike.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have Mr. Perfect, 2002 Mr. Perfect, which is interesting. I thought he looked pretty good, like physically, but he gets on the mic, and he sounded a little rough. Like his voice, you could tell. He has some years on him based on his voice. His voice sounded a little worn down, and he just cut a quick promo saying that he's the perfect pick for the draft. So this match, I would say, it was really nothing. I thought it was just something they put in there to kind of stall and not go straight into the draft and maybe build a little bit of suspense. Perfect did some of his, you know, normal offense. He did a perfect plex, but Taz got the ropes. I thought it was a little disjointed. And again, I think it was just mainly some background to kill a little bit of time before going straight to the draft. Taz won with the Taz mission. I gave this one half a star. Really not much. It was probably 2 minutes or so.
Yeah, I gave it a half a star as well. I kind of feel like Perfect seemed a little bit drunk. I don't think he was, but it kind of seemed that way a little bit. Pretty much after he hit the Perfect Plex, I feel like they weren't really on the same page, and they kind of stumbled through the like closing minutes of the match. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's always good to hear that Mr. Perfect theme. It's always good to see Mr. Perfect in this era, because I don't think he hangs around too much longer. But, yeah, it was a good little thing to sit out there before the crowd, or before the crowd, before they started making the picks and stuff.
But yeah, it was basically just something to kill time, and it's something we'll get used to on this show, because this is about par for the course as we get through the rest of the show. All right, so moving along, we cut to the war room of Ric Flair. So I refer to it as war room, like is usually what they say, like in the NFL and stuff during drafts, where they're kind of looking over all their spreadsheets. And they did a really good job. I kind of liked how they had the war room set up for both GMs, and that they were kind of looking over their stats. And of course, Flair has Arn as his right hand man to help him with this. And Arn looked like completely, and I think you may know what I'm talking about. He definitely looked like a Southern dad or an uncle I found here. Yeah, for sure. Like, he definitely looked like he would be like my dad or one of my dad's friends, for sure.
Like, the way he's dressed. He definitely looks like your dad's buddy that, you know, lives down the street.
So we have, we find out that Vince is going to get the first pick. And Arn says that they need to have an A and B plan. So there really wasn't a ton of substance to it as far as them giving away strategy or anything. It just kind of let us know Vince is getting the first pick, and that just to kind of establish that this is where they're strategizing, that they each have their little rooms that they're planning everything out. You have anything to add, Logan, on this?
I like that Flair had Anderson as his, you know, kind of right-hand man, assistant kind of a guy, and that Vince kind of stood alone because, you know, he didn't need any help.
Yeah, it makes sense. So on that note, like you said, so then we cut to Vince's, his own war room, which he has a bunch of folders out, and there's an Angle photo, a picture of Kurt Angle conspicuously on the table. So we'll see how the actual execution of this goes. But already, like with these two war rooms and what we saw at the beginning with all the guys and the kind of waiting around in the locker room, I like the aesthetics of everything. I really like the presentation, the podiums, the war rooms, all the guys in the back. I really like the way it's being presented as far as the look of everything. We don't completely know like how it's actually going to go down yet, but I like the way it looked.
Yeah, it gave it a real sports feel. It was a good idea on them.
Yeah, they definitely put effort into the presentation of it, like the actual look of how it was going to come across on TV. Mm-hmm. All right, so moving on. So Vince comes out for his first pick at the podium, and I thought this was a perfect – it's a real subtle thing, but it was a perfect Vince line that he says that he gets the first pick because he defeated Flair in a coin toss. It's funny that he said he defeated him, like that you can defeat somebody in a coin toss, which is 100% luck. I just thought it was a great, like, classic Vince, Vince line to say that he defeated someone in a coin toss. So, of course, we are they really haven't gone away, but we are still really heavy in the what chance. So already as Vince starts to talk, everything he says, we get the what chance pretty loudly from the crowd. Which is something that's going to continue, unfortunately. I don't know what your thoughts are on the what chance, but
you know, it can come or go. You know, it's whatever. Yeah. It's going to happen whether we want it to or not.
Yeah. So he makes his first pick. The first overall pick is The Rock, which, I mean, this makes sense. The Rock is arguably the biggest star they have. So I thought this was a logical pick for Vince to pick The Rock. You have any thoughts on The Rock as his number one pick?
No, I thought it was a great pick. It was the obvious choice. I believe the graphic said that he was the youngest WWE champion at this point still. So, but yeah, I think it was a solid pick, of course.
Yeah, the graphics are real cool. That's something I had in my notes, too, is that I like the little graphic that comes up and kind of runs down the stats of the guy. Again, the presentation for this was, I thought, really top-notch, like with all these little touches, like you said, to make it feel like something you would see for, like, the NFL draft or something like that. But so this already sets up some tension because Rock, who's a pretty big face at this point, he's full on like face Rock at this point. So he's not happy that he's getting picked by Vince. So he heads out to a massive pop. He is super over. This is like the Rock kind of getting to the tail end of his first run, because by SummerSlam, he'll pretty much be gone for a good little while after that. And so we're in March. So he's got about 6 months or so, but we're getting to the tail end of his main run in WWF. But he's still, obviously, he's still way over the crowd. He has a crowd in the palm of his hands. So Vince speaks first. He says Rock can't lay hands on him. He's not putting a foot in any candy asses. And Rock can't say it doesn't matter because it matters to him, Rock. The whole time, Vince is getting an asshole chant. And so to combat that, he tells the crowd, don't call The Rock an asshole. He's my number one pick. Don't call him names. And he says he made The Rock. He brought him in and he can take him out. And so Rock cuts him off with the whoa, whoa, whoa. Starts running down all of his historic Raw moments. Kind of it's Rock reminiscing on everything he's done, that it wasn't Vince that made The Rock, it's the people that made The Rock, kind of just getting some cheap heat like The Rock is known to do, but he's so good at it, kind of just getting, you know, he mentions, he said something about Beaver Stadium, which, does that even make sense in here? Did he just want to, is Beaver Stadium affiliated with Penn State? I don't know.
Yeah, that's their football stadiums, what they're called.
Yeah, that makes sense.
King actually piped up when he said the word Beaver and JR to calm down.
Yeah. then he gets the crowd to do this chant where one side of the arena says you are and the other side says an asshole at Vince. So we have the whole crowd saying you are an asshole, and of course the entire crowd listens because The Rock is a master of working the crowd. JR had a weird line saying that it was like a proctologist convention. I don't know if you caught that one, which I missed that one. Yeah. Which I didn't quite understand, because I don't know if it's a I get the whole proctologist an asshole thing, but why would they be chanting you are an asshole if they're,
I don't know.
Very vaguely related. But anyway, so this was a typical Rock promo. He's super over. I find Rock gets a lot of crap because he does have a lot of catchphrases, but like in this promo, he did rely on his catchphrases, but he also had a lot of substance to it, bringing up his history on Raw because this was going to be his last time on Raw because Vince drafted him to SmackDown. And he's just so, everything he does is so effortless. Like he has the crowd in the palm of his hand, and I always love him interacting with Vince because there's such a good contrast, because Rock has all this swagger and Vince is in his suits and he's so stiff and corny kind of. And so I always think they play off of each other well. It might have been a bit long, but they're both so good at it, I kind of understand why you would let them go this long. I mean, they're both massively over, so why not? Any thoughts on this whole Rock-Vince exchange?
Yeah, I mean, people can get on the Rock about catchphrases and all that, but, you know, people sing along with them and, you know, play along with them every time he does them. So, I mean, it obviously works. And, I feel like if any superstar could get a catchphrase to get over with the crowd, they're automatically 10 times, you know, more likely to get over and, you know, maybe even advance their career a little bit, you know. So, but, yeah, it was a good segment. The Rock's over as always to the highest degree. And, it was a good segment to start the show.
Yeah, and it's already starting to establish kind of the tension between that these guys have, you know, obviously Flair is the face and Vince is the heel GM. And so the faces are not going to be particularly excited to get drafted by Vince. So it's already setting up kind of the tension of and conflict with guys wanting to go with one particular guy. Okay, so Flair is out next. He comes out to the podium to make his first pick, and he chooses The Undertaker. Which, again, makes sense. This is logical. Why we take the Undertaker? Undertaker's a big deal. And considering you can't take Austin or Triple H or any of those guys, I thought Undertaker made sense as a pick. But just like The Rock, Taker's pissed because he doesn't want to go with Flair because he does not like Flair. So any thoughts on this Flair's first pick?
The Undertaker's a great pick, obviously. They had just come off their feud from WrestleMania. They had just had their awesome WrestleMania match. So I think that played into a little bit of why Taker was pissed. But, you know, you can't not take him if he's there. So good pick.
Yeah, and it, like you said, so with these first two picks, it's kind of like also showing they're not afraid to pick guys that they don't particularly like or don't get along with. They're going for whoever's the biggest name, which makes sense, which is what you would do. So, all right. So Kurt confronts Vince backstage for not picking him first. Like basically Kurt is, I guess you could say, jealous that Vince would not pick him first. Vince claims that it was his strategy. He wanted to swerve everybody. And then on the other side, Taker comes in upset that Flair picked him. And so kind of just continue with the drama that we just saw at the podium about the first picks, them not wanting to be picked by the GM that picked them. Anything to add here, Logan?
Yeah, Kurt said something about his feelings being hurt that he wasn't the first pick. So I thought that was really funny. And Vince said something about, you know, fixing Flair picking Undertaker. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets fixed or whatever happens with that.
True. Yeah, he did say like he's going to take care of it or something like that. You're right. All right. So after all those picks, we finally get another match. We have Edge, a tag team of Edge and DDP, which I thought was an interesting tag team. I'm not really sure if they had any history together before this or if they were just kind of thrown together.
I think this was kind of feud versus feud tag team match. One guy was against one guy, one guy was against the other, you know. So
that makes sense. And so they're facing Christian and Booker T. I thought this was an interesting matchup. I don't remember from this time, but do you know if this DDP music, is this a dub?
Was it the, yo, it's me, it's DDP?
I don't think so. I think it was something way more generic. It was
I think it was rough. I think it was that, but without the word. You know, like I think it was what the beat was, but I think that was his music. It just didn't have the words at the beginning.
That makes sense. I could see him. I could see DDP owning, like having a trademark on "It's Me, DDP." That seems like something he would do. And so they did like a recap of what led them to this, which I think was Christian interfered in, I think, Edge's match. I want to say I don't remember. Only thing I remember is that Edge's. I mean, Christian's outfit was just absolutely ridiculous. He had like these baggy khakis and this flame shirt. He looked very 2002. And he desperately needs a new look. He's still got the long hair here. He's definitely looking out of date. Christian's desperately in need of that new look. He needs to cut his hair and get rid of the
mesh shirt.
The mesh shirt. And I thought DDP looks kind of out of place in this whole thing also. I don't know what it is. I don't know if you agree. What's your thoughts on DDP at this point in time?
It kind of looks like time has passed him by. And I think him and Christian were kind of feuding at this point. They had also had a match at WrestleMania, and I think Christian interfered in a European championship match that DDP was in. But yeah, DDP's kind of, he just seems kind of like the old guard that kind of needs to maybe go away.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of
something like that, you know, some other role.
And I feel like that's what they're hoping probably to accomplish with the draft is to kind of like shuffle everything around for guys like that. But the match itself, Booker wins with a scissors kick. It was real standard tag stuff, not very long at all. Really not enough time to really do much of anything. But they did have a lot of energy, I thought, in the match. But it just, the match was only a couple minutes, so there's no time to establish any kind of tag, no psychology or anything. They just come in and do a few moves, and then Booker hits a scissors kick and wins. So I want to star on this one just because I thought it was a little more crisp than what we saw earlier, but, I mean, not enough time to really do it much of anything.
Yeah, DDP, it's a diamond cutter at some point, so that that bumped it up to about a star for me. So, yeah, it was just pretty basic, pretty standard. They're still playing up the Edge and Christian being brother storyline. I don't know how much longer that lasts, but I always thought that was funny that they carried it out this long. And Christian had the great, "At last you're on your own" music. I always loved that theme. So, but yeah, it was, you know, pretty standard tag. Didn't last long enough to really accomplish much, but you know, one star.
And it's almost like they have to have some matches, but you can tell they want to do too much of anything because everything is getting reshuffled. So unless it's something that directly relates to the draft, like something to do with the which guy's going to which show, it's like they're not really worried about building any angles right now because the draft is the focus of everything.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice if a couple of the matches would have been for a pick or something like that, but they had it pretty laid out before the show. So,
yeah. So we go back to Kurt, who is continuing to wind events. He reads off his accolades while Vince is continuing to strategize. This is just classic heel whiny Kurt Angle, whining that Vince didn't pick him. So to try and placate him, Vince goes ahead and picks him second. But in classic whiny Kurt style, he is still mad, even though Vince ends up picking him with his second pick. He's still mad that he wasn't number one. So again, this is a logical pick. Angle is obviously a top tier guy. It makes sense to pick him second. Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, Kurt's obviously a great pick. His character work when he's the whiny baby face that doesn't ever get his way is just so awesome. He's such a great character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, good pick at number two. And this is about where it falls off. So
yeah, we'll see where it goes from here. And we're also already starting to get, so I'm pretty sure this one was picked backstage because they're in the back and Kurt's whining and he picks backstage, which I thought is already kind of weird because it would seem like you need to go to the podium for every pick. And they start, I guess it's just due to time and everything, but it's like some of them are done at the podium, some were done backstage, which I thought felt a little bit weird and inconsistent. But Flair's back at the podium for his pick, and like you said, this is where things start to get weird. He picks the entire NWO, which the NWO by this point is Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and X-Pac, not Hogan, because Hogan has kind of split off of them. And this is sort of the first hiccup in the consistency of the draft, because how can you pick a group? And also, I would argue that even if you're getting three guys and somehow this is within the rules to get three guys with one pick, you can pick a whole stable. Like, why is Flair picking the NWO? Because I guess, aren't they kind of Vince's thing? I guess maybe he's trying to have them in control so Vince doesn't have them. But the main logic flaw is, like, how can he pick three guys with one pick? Which, as we're going to see later, doesn't really match the logic of the draft later as far as tag teams. So it's getting real murky real quick. And it's already start to establish that I think is one issue with the whole draft thing is that everything we're seeing, all the heat is being transferred to the authority figures and who they're drafting. We're not seeing anything to set up much as far as like guys feuding with each other too much. It's all about guys being mad at Flair, guys being mad at Vince, and that's where all the heat is. Everybody's in conflict with the boss in some way. But okay, so what was your thoughts on the NWO pick right here?
I thought it was an awful pick, and you know, like you said, it kind of murkies up the rules because they didn't really go into the whole tag team thing. They didn't really establish whether you could pick the whole team or you had to pick them as individuals and just happen to get both of them or whatever. But I mean, picking the whole NWO is kind of crazy, and you know, I don't want to dive too much into the future, but pretty much only one of these guys really hangs around too long. So
yeah, but, that's what I thought too. Like, to me, there's not a lot of value in the NWO without Hogan.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, they're a name. They're a big name. I get. But, you know, just not a very good pick.
All right. So we cut back to Vince, who's now he's turned it on Angle because he's pissed off that he lost NWO. And so Angle whispers something into Vince's ear, presumably giving a hint as who to pick next. And with his third pick, Vince chooses Chris Benoit, who I believe, so correct me if I'm wrong, but he had been injured, right, for a while?
Yeah, this is when he was out with the neck injury.
Yeah, and so you can kind of assume that Angle is whispering to Vince, like, basically Benoit is going to be back at some point fairly soon, and you want to get him because he's a great pick. So it's kind of like Angle kind of making up for not getting NWO, and at least as far as in this time frame, probably some solid advice from Angle to Vince. What do you think?
Yeah, and you know, I think he was kind of warning Vince that Flair was probably going to pick him coming up or something like that, maybe because of Horseman ties back from WCW days and stuff like that. But yeah, a solid pick for the future, at least. He might not be a huge name right now, but he would, you know, I think he would go on to probably be a pretty good name. So,
okay, so we go, and in a continuing trend, now we cut back to Flair backstage, and the NWO is mad at him. So we're getting in this groove of, it seems like every pick we get, whoever gets picked for the most part is pissed off at the person that picked them. Rick reassures the NWO, said that he's going to make sure everything's okay for them. To me, and you kind of mentioned it earlier, the NWO at this point just seem, and I know they haven't even been here very long, but they just seem so blah to me. To me, they have no juice. They seem really out of place. They don't have any of the heat that you would associate with like classic NWO. They just seem kind of lost here. So I wasn't a huge, I don't know. They didn't do anything for me, I guess is how I would say it.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, they said they won't listen to Flair. They only listen to Vince. So, you know, they're already off to a rocky start.
Yeah, which is what I was saying earlier. It's like, why? It's weird that Flair would do that to himself, but I guess. All right, so next pick, Flair has his third pick, and he's going to go with Kane, which is a pretty solid pick. And again, I thought it's weird how we keep kind of switching around where some picks are done at the podium, some are done backstage. It's kind of because it's not a huge deal, but I guess it's like, I thought the podiums were pretty cool, so I'd like them to utilize it a little bit more, but I guess it's a time thing.
Yeah, I think they just didn't want to have to consistently walk in and out and all that kind of stuff and just make it to where that they, if they had something else to do out near the ring, that they could make the pick then. But, you know. But, yeah, Kane was a solid pick. He may not be the, you know, superstar name, but like you said, with Jericho, Triple H, and Austin out of it, you know, Kane's probably one of the higher tier stars that they have right now. So, Solid pick.
For sure. All right. And then after all of our draft stuff, again, we finally have another match. We get Trish versus Ivory. And right before the match, we get one of the classic PSA things that they always do. This was always one of my favorite, which is tobacco is wacko if you're a teen. That one is firmly implanted in my brain from watching this at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing this on like every Raw. Any memories of tobacco is wacko?
I remember the name, but I don't remember much about it. But yeah. I actually wrote the other two ads down. It was Customs Album Fast. I'm a big custom fan.
I can't say I am. But
and then the other one was Mint Skittles, and Mint Skittles' catchphrase was "Feel the kiss, taste the rainbow." Did you ever try Mint Skittles?
I'm not a big mint person. I like regular, and sour Skittles are kind of my jam. But
I'm a fan of both of those.
Yeah. But WWF and Skittles, they've always been pretty tight. I think we actually talked about this a while back, that I think sour Skittles or Skittles sponsored like some pay-per-views. So
yeah, I think sour Skittles actually sponsored WrestleMania 18 that had just happened. So
oh wow. So yeah, WWF and Skittles tight. Tight partnership.
Yeah, Vince must be a big candy fan because they have a lot of candy sponsors.
Okay, so we get into the match. So the outfits, I put in my notes that there was a lot of vinyl going on because both of them kind of had the vinyl kind of plastic looking pants going on here.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
And King, in a very questionable comment, says that He mentioned something about Jazz. I remember why he brought up Jazz, because she's not even in the match, but he said that he had seen better faces on a gargoyle, which is a classic cheesy King line, which we're kind of getting into, like, kind of insufferable King at this point, where he's like real pervy and just makes a lot of corny jokes that are not always great. And I guess this is an example.
To go along with the Mint Skittles feel the kiss thing, he told Trish that she could feel the kiss, and then he made the first puppies reference in this match. So mark that down.
This is like a pervy uncle. But again, in a trend that we've seen all night, this match gets barely any time. It is super quick. But again, like I said earlier with the tag match, it was energetic. It's very hard to put together anything when you're only given 2 to 3 minutes, because obviously on the show, they're just really worried about the draft. I thought there was a really awesome head scissor off the top rope, which I thought was pretty much the highlight of the match. So I want a star on this just for the energy, but really not enough to – really not much to talk about in this one.
Yeah, like you said, it was a fairly energetic match. I always like the bulldog that Trish did off the ropes, and with the vinyl pants, you got to give it a star at least. So,
which Trish won? I don't know if I.
Trish won with the bulldog. Yeah. I think it was Stratus Faction. I think that was the name of that move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, if we have nothing else on that one, we'll keep on chugging. So Vince is back at the podium. A nice callback to earlier. The crowd has not forgotten the "you are an asshole" chant, and so he gets pelted with that as he walks out to the podium, and he picks Hogan at number 4. Hogan is basically at this point cut ties with the NWO after kind of his, I guess, unexpected babyface turn at WrestleMania. Because we're only about a week removed from WrestleMania. I think this is not the Raw after Mania, but there was like one Raw after Mania, and now we're here.
That's right.
So he picks Hogan, which again, this is especially based on WrestleMania. I mean, Hogan is a solid pick, and this is interesting to see where we're going to go with this whole little run with Hogan here. But what'd you think of the Hogan pick?
Yeah, another solid pick, and it kind of keeps him and Rock together, so in case they wanted to revisit that match at any point, they could definitely do that. But, for name value alone, it's a real good pick.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, we cut to Vince's war room, and he is – oh, I'm sorry. We go to Rick at the podium before we go back to Vince, and he's going to do his number 4 pick, and he's going to pick the Intercontinental Champion, RVD. Again, these are still – so far, I would say every pick we've gotten to me makes pretty good sense except for the NWO. I thought besides the NWO, which is kind of illogical and just not even a great pick, I wouldn't think. All these picks, I think, make sense for the most part. I can't find too much fault with it. We haven't seen much as far as the rationale as to why each guy's picking who they're picking, aside from they're picking big names, but there hasn't been much as about like why particularly they want RVD, except for like here, we're starting to see that one strategy I have is you want to get the guys with the titles, because if you have the title, then the title is on your show. So we can assume that's part of Rick's strategy here is to get RVD, is to get the Intercontinental title.
Yeah. I mean, and RVD's at this point is a rising star. I think, had they probably used him in some situations, he probably could have been a much bigger star for them. But getting the IC title was probably the crux of Rick's pick at this point. But, RVD's a good talent as well.
Yeah. And so now we cut back to Vince, and he is upset that he did not get RVD, mainly because he wants the Intercontinental title. And something, this has nothing to do with the picks or anything, but I don't know if you noticed this peacock painting in Vince's office. It was saw it.
No, I didn't.
It was very, very strange. It was like this extremely detailed, it was right behind him every time they would cut to him, and it was this extremely detailed peacock. I don't know if maybe that's some Vince symbolism or something. I don't know, but Kurt says,
"Good talk, you know."
Yeah. Cock of the walk. but Kurt says that to, so we're kind of getting this, this weird kind of father-son dynamic with Kurt and Vince here, where it's like he's the angry dad. Kurt's the whiny kid and the angry dad. So it's like he wants to please him now, and he says, look, I'll take care of it. Let me face RVD tonight, and I will get us the Intercontinental title, and we can bring it back to SmackDown. And I thought this was a pretty good setup for a match, right? Because first of all, it's a good matchup, RVD and Kurt, and it's logical that he wants to go out and win the title so he can bring it back to Vince on SmackDown. So I thought this is a pretty good way to set up the match for later. What'd you think of this whole deal?
Yeah, he wants to make Vince a proud papa, so yeah. I mean, it makes sense and all, and you know, Angle and RVD will definitely be a good match, but yeah, I mean, it makes storyline sense and all that, so yeah, it was a good segment.
Yeah, and it gives us something to look forward to in this show in the ring, because it's been very heavy on the draft stuff, so it's kind of good to have some kind of featured match besides what we've seen so far, which is kind of just stuff being thrown out there to kill a few minutes.
Yeah, it's always good to see a title match, too.
Yeah, for sure. And so next up, we have Rock and Hogan backstage, and they cut a little tandem promo. They talk about how the NWO turned on Hulk, and Hulk wants to tag against the NWO to kind of get revenge because he wants their last Raw moment to be big, as he and Rock are both going to SmackDown. So I guess kind of like in the wake of Mania, Rock and Hogan are kind of buddy-buddy now after they sort of had their respect moment after their match. You could really see the goodwill building on Hogan, I think, at this point after the performance at Mania. Like, you'd see he's kind of getting over as a face, the crowd's behind him. He's getting this, he's getting the rub from Rock, who's obviously massive. And I like how they're building up a match for later in the show, because now we're basically going to get Rock Hogan against the NWO in a handicap match. Because one thing I'm thinking about this is that this is in front of a live crowd. So all these backstage things, it's like, cool, because you're at this kind of historic thing. You're getting to see the first draft, but I got to think the crowd, like the audience, wants to see something in the ring. They want something to, besides just watching guys walk to the podium and watch on the screen. So this is another kind of cool match to see Rock and Hogan team up.
Yeah, it was good to keep Rock and Hogan kind of together, because, you know, I think Hogan would have been okay by himself, but just keeping him with Rock always gets that little Rock rub with him. And, you know, yeah, putting the big names like Rock and Hogan out there against the NWO, which is a big name at this point, mm-hmm. even though it might be a little blander version of what they had been. But, you know, yeah, it's a big main event or big match kind of feel. So it hyped the crowd up for sure.
Yeah, Rock and Hogan on a team is definitely like a, you know, that's a cool thing to see.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So we're back to Vince's picks. I think I didn't put whether this was a podium one or not, but he picks Billy and Chuck with Rico as they are the tag champs. And that's his number five pick. So he's getting the tag titles with his. And so here we can assume here that, okay, so since Flair picks the NWO, which is three guys with one pick, and Vince picks Billy and Chuck with one pick, we can think, okay, so if guys are in a tag team or a faction, you can get them with one pick, is what we're kind of led to believe, even though it wasn't established beforehand. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how this plays out later as we get into some other picks. This is kind of come into question as to, we're going to have some that's going to contradict this later on.
Yeah. And I think they really allowed them to pick Billy and Chuck just because they were the tag champs, you know, mm-hmm. just because they didn't, you know, you don't want to split those two up and have the belts on separate brands or whatever. But I really was confused by why the women's and the Undisputed Championship are on both brands, but why are the tag titles not on both?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So, but, you know, it you know, there's a lot of logic flaws, but
yeah,
it'll get figured out eventually.
Yeah, you sort of get the sense that this is not something they planned out, like, really far in advance as far as, like, how all the logistics are going to go. Mm-hmm. It definitely has a little bit of a feel like they just kind of put this together quickly. I don't know if they did or not, but sort of things like this, the inconsistency sort of suggests that they're just kind of trying to figure it out quickly.
Yeah, kind of figure it out on the fly a little bit.
So we get the flash. I always like these. So we get the little flashback. They've been doing this since like the mid 90s, but it's the flashback of the NWO killing, like beating up Rock and Hogan. I think it was like at the previous week's SmackDown or something like that.
That's correct.
Yeah, beating them up. And so I always like this because they would always do these little flashback things right before the match that they were relevant to. So it kind of gave you a reminder of what happened last week to kind of set up what's going on this week. So I always kind of like those. They had different sponsorships and names. I forget what this one was, but these are always effective.
Yeah, pay attention to that. But yeah, I always like those before the next segment and all that.
Okay, so we get the big tag match, handicap tag match, which is Rock and Hogan versus NWO. Like we mentioned earlier, this is a huge match on paper. Hogan and Rock teaming. The NWO's entrance is still killer with all the lighting effects and stuff. It's still a really awesome entrance. And I guess X-Pac is kind of like, I don't know how recently he had joined. Did they kind of throw him in there to sort of fill the spot left by Hogan? I don't know how long he had been with the NWO. Or do you know, Logan?
I think he had joined that last Thursday on SmackDown. Yeah. I think that was the big thing, is he kind of helped Hall and Nash beat the crap out of Rock and Hogan. So it was kind of an outnumbered situation.
Yeah, makes sense. That's how it came off to me, is that they needed to kind of fill the void, because if you just have Hall and Nash, it's not really the NWO. It's just like the outsiders. Crowd's super hot. And one thing we haven't mentioned yet is they keep having the ticker come up at the bottom to sort of recap all the picks that have happened early in the show, which I thought was another nice kind of aesthetic touch on this, to have the ticker to remind you of all the previous picks. Again, building that like this is a real sports style draft. I thought that was a good touch.
Yeah, good visual for sure. And they've said the word poison about 1,000 times at this point, talking about the NWO.
So this match, it gets a little more time than what we've seen of everything else on this show for obvious reasons. So each member of the NWO tags in. They kind of ping pong for Hogan for a little while until Nash kind of takes advantage. And then a good portion of the match was the NWO kind of isolating Hogan. And he sort of plays the face in peril for a very short time until he tags Rock. He gets a hot tag to Rock, and Rock is always a really awesome hot tag guy because he has so much energy and charisma, and so he kind of lays them out. So that was pretty cool. They're really pushing, I thought, during this, that is the last appearance on Raw. Like, this is going to be the last Rock Bottom you ever see on Raw. This is the last this you'll see of Rock on Raw. So they're really trying to push the finality of the draft. Like, you're not going to see Rock. Like, really trying to get across that, like, hey, we're serious. When he goes to SmackDown, you're not going to see Rock on Monday night, which at the time is like kind of wild to think about. But like, arguably their biggest star is not going to be on what we've been taught is for years is their flagship show, that, you know, these big stars are never going to be on there again. It's kind of strange at the time to really believe that. But Hogan drops the leg, X-Pac breaks it up, as then everything kind of starts to break down. The NWO starts ganging up on them. Kane shows up and kind of wrecks everybody and comes in for the save to help Rock and Hogan, and that kind of leads to the DQ. And so we also see that there's no, like, loyalty to their brand yet, because Kane is a Raw guy and he's helping out the SmackDown guys. So they really haven't established any, like, that the SmackDown guys are against the Raw guys yet. But as far as the whole match goes, I thought it was pretty solid. Kind of an abbreviated basic tag formula stuff before Kane comes in and ends it. But you could see the crowd was really in the Hogan. I went 2 stars on this one. It was solid, but not anything amazing, but just kind of solid.
Yeah, I went 1.5 stars. It was pretty basic. Like you said, they worked over on Hogan for a while. Rock got the hot tag. I thought it was funny how Rock hit, I think he hit the Rock Bottom on Hall maybe. And, you know, I wrote down that Hogan must leg drop, because, you know, Rock clearly could have gotten the pin there, but
yeah,
Hogan wanted to drop the leg. I think Flair, when he picks Kane, says he's kind of picking them so he can keep an eye on the NWO, keep them in check or something like that. So that's kind of why I think Kane kind of helped the other two guys. But yeah, it was kind of weird that the Raw guy kind of helped the two SmackDown guys at the same time.
Yeah, because I think in our heads, after so many years, it gets like, because they've pushed that in later years, that it gets ingrained to your head like, well, you're a Raw guy, you have to help the Raw guys. But I guess at this point, it's like still a little bit of the Wild West when it comes to the whole brand split thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the extension hasn't fully gone into place so far. So, I mean, I guess one more night you can kind of help the SmackDown guys out, help your buddies.
Yeah. Okay, so after this match, Vince bursts into Rick's war room. He says Rick is sabotaging him. And so they kind of start machine gunning some picks out while they're in the same room. Flair takes Booker T, number 5. Vince responds by taking Edge, number 6. And so you could tell as we're getting to a later part of the show, they really need to start getting these picks out because the goal is for them to each have 10 picks. We didn't mention, so whoever doesn't get picked at by 10, when each has 10 picks, they'll be thrown into a lottery, which is going to be randomly selected who goes to each show. So they're kind of picking up the pace here. Rick takes Big Show at number 6. Vince takes Rikishi at number 7. In a funny moment, I think it was Rick said, so you can sit his fat ass on your face.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which causes Vince to push down Rick. And then in classic chicken shit style, Vince bails out through the door. So we had a lot of rapid fire picks here. I thought they made sense because now we're kind of getting to the mid card. And, you know, I'd say Edge and Booker T kind of on the same level. And then I guess Big Show and Rikishi, you kind of get a big guy for each show. So you could tell they're kind of trying to balance it. So these picks, I think, for the most part, made decent sense.
Yeah, I mean, Booker T and Edge are high-tier mid-carders. So, that, you know, they can eventually get into the main event, just a little more polishing. And, yeah, you got your two Haas guys with Big Show and Rikishi. So, Rick has a pretty Haas roster so far. He has a lot of big guys I feel like he's picked.
Yeah, for sure. Like he's got Kane, Undertaker, Nash. Yeah, he's got some beef on his roster for Raw. Next up we have a match with the Hardys and Billy and Chuck all come out, but it is just a singles match with Jeff Hardy versus Billy. The Hardys were glowing as they came out. This was a match with like a ton of shenanigans. Again, not a lot of time for this one. Like most matches on this show, they not get a ton of time. It was mostly just a lot of shenanigans with Rico interfering. And then Lita comes in and she hits a really, really bad Rana. Like,
oh, yeah.
On Rico, it was like her legs were both on the same side of his head. They were like both her legs are on his like right shoulder, but he sold it like as if she caught his head. So it was very strange. It looked really bad.
Rico's a marvel during this time.
So Jeff is able to get a roll up after Lita gets Rico. Again, it was kind of just a big mess, not a really much of a match. I went half a star.
Yeah, I went half a star too. JR said he's never heard of a team having a hairstylist before. King mentioned something about Rico thinking or being appalled by Jeff's rainbow colored hair.
Oh, yeah.
and then I made the note about the horribly botched run at the end. But yeah, Jeff gets the roll up with that distraction. But yeah, you know, not too bad. Jeff was always one of my favorites, and I think he really became one of my favorites during this time because he has a match further down the road with Undertaker that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And that I really think that was one of the first TV matches I saw, like kind of week to week. But yeah, Jeff is always one of my favorites, so I'll give it a half a star just for that.
Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, making that Lita Hernanconrada was rough stuff. But kudos to Rico because he tried to sell it, but. Yeah, it was just like classic. You don't want the two tag teams to go against each other, so you just pick one guy from each team and put them against each other.
Yeah.
All right, so we head back to Flair's war room, and he says that he is going to pick Bubba Ray as his first step to getting the Dudley Boys as a team on Raw. And so basically to screw him, Vince responds by picking D-Von. And so this is kind of a weird thing because from what we've seen so far, now you made a good point that maybe for Billy and Chuck, it's because they're the champs, so that's why you get them in a package deal. But the NWO thing, so you can pick the NWO, which is three guys in one faction, but you have to use two picks if you want to get the Dudley boys. So this is kind of where the logic, you start to see that they're just using whatever logic fits their purposes of whatever story they want to tell. And yeah. I get why they want to do it, because it is kind of an interesting angle. Like the reluctant, like most breakups you see with a tag team, it's like, it's, you know, one guy turns on the other one or something. You don't see as often like a reluctant breakup where the guys are forced to break up even if they don't want to. So it is a cool angle, but it just, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially with the NWO pick, or it should have been established at some point. So it kind of takes a little bit out of it when it seems to be a little illogical with the draft. What'd you think of this whole deal?
Yeah, and the Dudleys have never really been a part. You could have done with this with a team like the Hardys. Like I could see the Hardys kind of splitting off and doing their own thing, because I think that they could be their own people. But the Dudleys have been such a package deal that it didn't really make much sense. But you know, we'll kind of see where this goes, and maybe it'll have good results, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, we'll see this continue as we get to SmackDown in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So next up, we have a match, or what we think is going to be a match, between Rikishi and Regal, which I was kind of a little bit pumped for this one. I thought this would be kind of an interesting match. I think anytime when I see Regal, I'm just interested to see like what he's going to do. Like to me, like figuring how Regal was going to work Rikishi would be interesting, but it never happens because Brock Lesnar comes out and ambushes Rikishi and kind of just beats the hell out of everyone, with Paul Heyman directing him. So we never really get the match. This was just a segment to start to continue to build Brock Lesnar as like a monster. I thought Rikishi's selling was really awesome when Brock hit him. Rikishi's always really been a good seller for a big guy. And JR had a classic line, because he said that Heyman was a hemorrhoid on the face of life. Which, again, is kind of like, I get what he's going for, but it's like, if he's a hemorrhoid, shouldn't he be like a hemorrhoid on the ass or the anus of life?
The ass of life, yeah.
Yeah, you don't get hemorrhoids on your face, JR, but I guess he just wanted to call him a hemorrhoid, but yeah. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I always really liked how I like how Lesnar hits the F5 back in this time, because it seems just so much more fluid than it is now. I feel like it's really clunky these days, but I feel like just the motion that when he spins him around was just so much more, you know, snug and really, really swift and quick. And it looked a lot cooler back then when he can just kind of glide into it.
So what were you, because this is very early Brock, where he's coming in and they're trying to put him over, this monster who's just coming with Heyman with him to wreck everybody. What was your initial impression of Brock? Because like I was a little younger, so to me at first, like I didn't know anything about his background as an amateur wrestler or anything like that, because I was a little bit too young still at this time to really like for any of that to really be relevant to me. And so I wasn't completely like, I definitely loved all the him coming out and like just destroying guys. But like to me, and I guess it's just because you know that they always bring in big guys. So to me, he hadn't quite yet like established what was going to set him apart, besides that he had Heyman with him. Like what was going to set him apart from other kind of big guys? Because other than just like being as brutal as he is, there's nothing really, the character at this point is not super like established as who he is. He's kind of just a monster. He wears pretty plain gear. He kind of has short blonde hair. So I wasn't like immediately like, well, this guy's going to be like the next star necessarily at this point. I don't know. How did you see him at this time?
Well, I feel like I had never seen anybody with muscles that big. He was, yeah. I mean, he just absolutely jacked. His traps were freaking huge as shit. And, you know, yeah, he could have ended up being one of those really generic, you know, kind of guys that they throw with Taker. And I mean, not necessarily in this period, but, you know, the guys in the past that they've kind of thrown with Taker, and Taker kind of, you know, lets him have maybe one win or two, and then he eventually squashes him and they just kind of go away forever. But, you know, with him having a manager, I kind of felt like he might be a little bit bigger of a deal, but.
For sure.
Yeah, it wasn't quite there yet, but it I don't think it was too far off. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like coming out of the Attitude Era where everything was so character driven with so many personalities. Like the biggest thing was like all the guys were larger in life, like The Rock, Stone Cold. He didn't immediately have that sort of aura to him. I mean, obviously he's going to get there, but it's just interesting to look back on like what he was at this point. But definitely it's still effective to have him come out and just like in matches before they start is a cool gimmick. Next up, we get a quick segment with Jazz at WWF New York, which is still in business at this point. And she kind of says that she's the bitch appearing on both shows. So not much to say about this. Kind of just a typical WWF New York segment.
Did you ever make it to WWF New York?
I never did. I think they were, by the time I was old enough to do my own trip to New York, I think they were long gone. I don't think they lasted too long.
I think I went in 2000. We went by. I don't think we ate there or anything, but we went in and took like a picture with the big mural of The Rock and everything. So there's a picture around my house with that somewhere. So might have to pull it out and send it to the group chat one day.
That's amazing. All right. So in a well-timed pick, Vince comes out to choose Brock, but Flair comes back at him and says that Vince is trying to cheat because it's not even his pick. So Vince tries to talk him out of it and bargain, saying he'll let him have two picks later. Flair's not having it, and he goes ahead and picks Brock. And in a funny moment, in retrospect, Vince picks Mark Henry and tries to kind of frame it that these are kind of equals, which at this point in time is kind of interesting considering like in the next few years where both guys were going to be, that Vince is equating Mark Henry to Brock. I thought was a funny to look back on that.
His
response is to pick Mark Henry, which Mark Henry would obviously kind of resurrect himself, but his career. But at this point, this is not the prime of Mark Henry's career.
Yeah. Like the next 2 or 3 years are probably not the best, the prime of Mark Henry's career to say the least.
So it's funny to hear Vince kind of say, you got Brock. I'm going to get Mark Henry. Those are even. But anyway, so Flair picks Regal, which Regal is Regal wants McMahon. So again, we continuously have these angles where people are getting picked by the GM they don't want to get picked by. Vince picks Maven, the famous winner of the first Tough Enough. And then what I thought was one of the odder picks of this whole drive, Flair picks Lita, which I thought was extremely random to pick Lita. Especially considering like he doesn't have either of the Hardys or anything like that. So the Lita pick seemed pretty out of left field for me.
Flair picks Regal because he's the European champion, basically, mm-hmm. I think. And then Vince counters with Maven because he's the hardcore champion. But the Lita pick was definitely very weird. And I think Vince calls Flair a lascivious pig for picking Lita because he thinks he's going to try and sleep with her or something like that. So
yeah, and he says that Rick, which is obviously supposed to be some sweet irony, but he says that Rick's going to turn Raw into a cesspool, which it's obviously funny coming from Vince. But so at that point, that basically wraps up the first 10 picks. So if you look at the 10 picks that each one got, if you had to pick, who do you think had the best initial 10 picks of this draft, Raw or SmackDown?
I'm going to go with SmackDown just based on the first four that Vince got. He got Rock, Hogan, Kurt, and Benoit. And, kind of after that, I feel like it kind of really fell off the map for both of them. But, just with the NWO pick, I can't support Flair on that one.
Yeah, I'd have to give him a Mel Kiper, like a D-minus or something on the NWO pick.
Something like that.
They kind of killed his first five. But, yeah, I'd have to agree with you. SmackDown definitely looks like the more appealing show, which is interesting because, again, I mean, Raw is the established show. We've been taught that conditioned to think that Raw is the top show. It is the number one show. It's where the major stuff happens, and SmackDown is kind of secondary. So it's interesting that the first 10 picks kind of make you think that SmackDown may be better. It kind of goes against what you would naturally think.
Yeah. But, maybe they did that on purpose just to kind of give SmackDown a boost. But
absolutely. Yeah.
We'll kind of see how it goes from this point on. But yeah, I'd definitely say SmackDown's the winner so far.
All right, so we have the Kurt and RVD match for the Intercontinental Championship because Kurt wants to try and bring home the Intercontinental title for Vince. Kurt ambushes RVD with a German. JR says to King, JR tells King, because King had one of his classic, like, really gaudy shirt, button-down shirts, and he says that King, you had a Nicole Kidman shirt with your nipple showing, which is the most amazing line by JR. Which he was right. It was a very
It was a very open shirt for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of silky. So I think King did have some nip action going on. But this was real back and forth, hard hitting. Kurt hit an outside a splash, but before this could really get going, Kurt kind of loses himself a little bit and kind of bumps the ref and hits the angle slam. But it doesn't matter because Tim White calls for the bell based on angle hitting him. So what seemed like a would be a really good match on paper really doesn't go anywhere because of the DQ. And they have a whole Edge comes out. So Kurt puts RVD in the ankle lock. He won't break it. So Edge comes out to make the save. And a bunch of refs have to come in and break the whole thing up as it turns into a big scrum. So I thought it was decent. Obviously, these are both really talented guys. It had a lot of energy, but like most of what we've seen on here, just not enough time to really do anything. I went a star and a quarter, and I thought it maybe puts a little heat on Edge and Kurt as a possible going into SmackDown. Since they're both on SmackDown, maybe this is something we'll see build as we continue.
Yeah, you know, this one kind of got cut off at the knees before it could get very far. I went a star on this one. I think if they had been given a little bit more time, this one could have been a pretty solid match. But yeah, it's good to see that they're already kind of setting up a feud between Kurt and Edge going forward for SmackDown. And you know, them two can definitely have some solid matches down the line, as I'm sure they will.
All right. And that finally brings us to our main event, which is the triple threat with Triple H, Stephanie, and Jericho. Triple H is the newly crowned Undisputed Champion after WrestleMania. He comes out what I thought was some pretty good face heat. His entrance at this point is really awesome. I find he comes out with the titles. He spits the water. He looks really intense. And we definitely are establishing that Triple H and Steph hate each other at this point in time, for sure. What did you think of Triple H? Just like your impressions at him at this point as kind of like the face champion.
Yeah, I really feel like the crowd was super behind him. I feel like this is the most face heat he's really ever gotten. Even to this day, I really think the fans were truly behind him at this point. And, you know, I think he's obviously much better as a heel as he's proven throughout his career, but this was a good time to kind of get behind him as a face. And I think they probably should have stuck with it a little bit longer than they did, but you know, they had their reasons. So,
yeah. But so the whole match kind of revolves around, Triple H is going after Steph because he's pissed off at her, and Jericho kind of cutting him off and trying to go for the cheap wins, and Stephanie just sort of getting in the way of everything. They do some comedy spots where Stephanie ends up falling and hitting Jericho falls with like a headbutt because she just kind of lands on his nuts. Jericho, because the thing now is that kind of like what we'll see later on with Shawn Michaels in the back, that now the quad and the knee is sort of like the built-in psychology for Triple H coming off the quad injury. So Jericho's doing that. He's working on that. And so they just do a lot of really well done, kind of like your basic triple threat spots, just with the caveat that like Stephanie is not really wrestling. She just kind of jumps in, gets in the way, and Triple H sort of gets distracted by her. She tries to steal some pins here and there. But finally, he hits a brutal clothesline on Stephanie. But Jericho gets the walls on him, but Steph cuts it off and takes a slam. Triple H gets the pedigree, but Stephanie breaks the pin, so he's pissed off at that, and so he spine busters Stephanie and pins her, and so per the stipulation that was established beforehand, Stephanie is gone permanently, and Triple H remains the undisputed champion. I thought this was a pretty solid main event. I thought it was well put together for what it was. Obviously not some classic wrestling match, but I thought I got to give credit to Stephanie. I thought she came in and like hit her spots and played her role well as kind of like the spoiler who's just kind of getting in the way and trying not to lose and steal a win. And she took some pretty brutal bumps in here. Like Triple H really like laid her out a few times, which was kind of awkward in this because the announcers, I mean, obviously she had kind of screwed him over, but it's like you're seeing this like 270-pound like jack dude just like destroy her with a clothesline is a little weird for the announcers to be kind of totally behind it. But I thought kudos to her for hitting her spots and taking the bumps. It was kind of just, I thought, pretty standard triple threat kind of spots and stuff that were executed well enough. I went 2.5 on this one. What'd you think, Logan?
Yeah, and Stephanie was resplendent in her as much leather as possible outfit.
Yes.
I believe at some point in the match, JR said the audacity was clotheslined right out of her britches over something about Steph when she took a clothesline. And yeah, the the spine buster in the match was pretty brutal, and it was a, you know, kind of a rough bump for Steph to take. Yeah. You know, I wrote down where this is the point when JR finally calls her a Jezebel. I feel like he hadn't really pulled that one out, because that's usually a pretty good Stephanie line that JR
wore
likes
it out too. I feel like he called her Jezebel like at least 12 times in this match. He was like wearing it out.
Steph also came out to the My Time entrance that Triple H used to use, and I always loved that that theme song for Triple H. So I'm glad she kept that alive. But yeah, it was pretty solid match. You know, pretty standard triple threat. I'm glad that they focus on the leg. You know, kind of kept that going with the quad injury and all that. And I gave it 2 stars.
Yeah, again, it was nothing great, because, I mean, especially here, this is not later Stephanie, who kind of becomes a pretty good, you know, she gets a little more jacked, and, like, this is still kind of skinny, like, you know, non-wrestler Steph. Really, her only role in matches at this point is just to kind of go in and not really play the role of a wrestler. But they did it well. You know, it's just a lot of breaking up pins and spoiling things, which is fine, but it wasn't anything great. So, but the main thing about this is that now she is gone. She gets escorted out by security, and in a really great moment, she's kind of kicking and screaming, which she's so good at, and kind of cackling and holding onto the ropes and fighting the entire time. And Triple H starts leading the crowd in the na 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 na, the whole chant to tell her goodbye and wave sarcastically to her. And so, at least from what we're told, Stephanie is gone. What did you think of the whole the ending with her being escorted out? I thought she'd played it well.
Yeah, she played the, you know, bratty daughter role kind of well, getting, you know, dragged out of the arena. And, you know, Triple H won a lot of points with Vince this night by starting the na-na-na, hey, goodbye stuff. Yeah. So that's always Vince's favorite thing.
And I think it's a good thing, like, we're looking back on this with so many years. I think at the time, people were so caught up in kind of Stephanie and, like, what was her role in the company, that it was harder for them to kind of step away and just look at, like, her performance, like, in the ring and how she's playing her character, like, to kind of look at that in a bubble and not have that be clouded by what they thought of her as, like, you know, she's putting herself into these angles, she's a McMahon inserting herself. I think it's a little easier now to just step back and, you know, give her a little bit of credit for whether she, if she's going to be in there, she's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, she's very solid at this time point. I think she really came into her own kind of around this time period. So, and she would, you know, continue to kind of be the same the rest of her career.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into our overall thoughts on this episode. So this is obviously kind of a weird episode of Raw as far as something to just sit and watch as a standalone episode, because kind of like I felt that after the initial novelty of like this is the draft and, you know, seeing how it was actually going to work, I felt like the draft parts got a little mundane to me. Like it was just kind of going through the motions and filling out each roster. Not having Austin, I think, hurt them because obviously, and I mean, they don't mention him either. It's not like, I didn't even find they built it as an angle, like, where's Austin going to go? And it wasn't like some drama hangover. They just said, like, at the top, you can't draft Austin. And that was about all they said, pretty much. And so they didn't, I thought it was kind of a weird vibe hanging over the show with that. And I just thought the draft came off a little anticlimactic and sort of just going through the motions and not quite as epic as what you would hope for the first one like this. And I didn't think there were enough storylines being built into it aside from the authority figure stuff, which I think is a little tricky because ideally, and obviously we'll see what happens whenever the shows actually start, but I feel like you want to start building some feuds. I thought they could have maybe built some feuds during the draft between particular guys and not just have everything be heat between the GM, the two GMs, and then the guys on the roster and the boss. It really puts over the authority figures as the main, you know, like source of heat. And these are not two guys who are going to be wrestling week to week. So it's kind of it's a hard thing to pull off, I think. So I just think this is a hard thing to pull off as a live, like typical episode of Raw. Like I think if you saw this now, it would probably be its own standalone kind of thing with no matches or anything. It would probably be like on the network and it would be more like what you see with the NFL draft or something. Like people would make picks and you would have analysts talk about it for a few minutes and they make the next pick. I don't know if they would really attempt to do it in a live setting, but at this point, this is kind of what they had, you know? Mm-hmm. So I went 4 out of 10 because I didn't think it was terrible, but as far as something to just kind of watch in a vacuum, it's not the most entertaining episode of Raw that you're going to find.
Yeah, I went 5 out of 10. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they had a good idea. The draft is obviously a good pull to get people to watch the show, you know, because, you know, that means you're at least changing things up and maybe it could lead to a more exciting direction or something to that effect. I really think they didn't have as many stars at this time as you would have thought, and automatically taking three, I guess, minus Stephanie, but even Stephanie's probably as big a star as a lot of people are on the roster at this point, but taking 3 stars automatically out of it kind of let the air out of the balloon to begin with. So, but you know, it was an okay episode of Raw, but nothing special, like you said.
Yeah, it wasn't quite, like I said, it just didn't have, I think watching it now, it doesn't feel like something with as much like gravitas as I think they may have hoped at the time. But they got out the way and it's done. So now we kind of know where we stand. And obviously after this, they do a lottery to kind of fill out the guys who didn't get drafted in the first 10. All right. So we'll see where they go and we will move into SmackDown, which was,
wrote down the draft lottery people. Do you want me to go through that real quick?
Yeah, go through them. Who do we have?
Okay, for Raw, we have Bradshaw, Stevie Richards, Matt Hardy, Raven, Jeff Hardy, Mr. Perfect, Spike, D'Lo, Sean Stasiak, Terry, Jacqueline. Goldust, Jerry Boss Man, Tommy Dreamer, your good buddy, Crash Holly, and Mighty Molly. So that's all for, and Mighty Molly's still with the Hurricane. So that was all for Raw. And then SmackDown was Billy Kidman, Tajiri, Chris Jericho, Ivory, Albert, Hurricane, Al Snow, Lance Storm, DDP, Tori Wilson, Scotty Tuhati, Stacy Keebler, Christian, Test, Farouk, Taz, Hardcore Holly, the Big Valboski, and Perry Saturn. Perry yeah. Saturn was the absolute last pick, and I believe SmackDown came our way with an extra pick, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right. So the takeaways I would take from that is we already said that we thought that SmackDown was a stronger top 10, and then they get Jericho too, which is probably a top 5 pick. So in the lottery, they get Jericho because since he didn't win the title on Raw, he gets thrown the lottery. So they get Jericho. So the Hardys don't get separated. They're going to stay together on Raw with Lita, which may reveal why Raw, like the random pick of Lita, just to keep her with the Hardys who are going to be picked later. And as we're going to see on this episode of SmackDown, the APA are another tag team that's going to get that are going to get broken up because of the draft. So it's definitely an angle that they seem to be into is the breaking up the tag teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. All right. So we'll head into SmackDown. So this is the March 28th, 2002. This is in the same week as the Raw. So this is basically kind of the follow-up to the draft. And so it's important to note that the draft does not go into effect until the following Raw. So at this point, everybody is still able to wrestle on SmackDown. So this is kind of like the true last hurrah before everybody is confined to their wherever they got drafted.
This and is so, the last SmackDown as we know it, as Michael Cole said.
Yes. Yeah. Michael. So our commentary is Michael Cole and King. And this is in Philadelphia. And before we even really get started, we have already announced our main event is going to be the NWO versus Rock. Who was it? Rock, Kane.
Kane and Hogan, yeah.
Yes, yes. Rock, Kane, and Hogan. And so kind of building off of what we saw on Raw, now they're just adding Kane into the mix too. And so our first match is going to be Booker T versus DDP. I kind of like that we came right out of the gate with the match, which is something that I think they get away from at some point. But I like that we come right out of the gate with a match. Stems from what we saw in the tag match on Raw. I thought Booker had a really cool entrance with the fire. Thought that was pretty sick. And
yeah, I always liked his explosions with the fire and stuff like that.
Yeah, but this was, again, real basic back and forth before a diamond cutter, but Booker T rolls out, and then Brock Lesnar comes out to pretty much end this with a DQ. So there's not much to this match because this is basically just another Brock coming to wreck shop. So I went half a star on this one.
Yeah, I went one star on this one. I actually thought it had something good cooking going along, but, you know, it kind of got cut off at the knees, and you know, Lesnar came out, looked like a monster, like mm-hmm. he did on Monday, and like I said earlier, the F5s that he had back then were just so much more crisp than they seem to be now. But yeah, he looked like a monster, like he did on Monday.
And I don't think it's an accident that they had him come out and do this in the opening match too. You know,
kind of go ahead and get him out in front of the crowd and show him off.
I think historically, usually that's you have a the beginning of the show, you have a ton of viewers, I think, usually. So they probably want to get him out there when they felt like they were going to have the most eyeballs watching, which is smart by them.
Yeah, I got a good move for sure.
Yeah. All right. So after that, Kurt comes out to the ring for an in-ring promo. He starts running down the crowd. He says that he risks his life in the Olympics with a broken freaking neck. And they shower him in booze. This is just some really awesome. Kurt is an excellent heel. Like, just a great whiny heel. They tell him he sucks, so he tells them they suck too. He said, these people are pathetic. Because Steph has to leave the WWF, says they have no compassion for thinking it's funny that she has to leave. And he says that Stephanie brings joy to millions, which I thought was a funny line because that's kind of like what Stephanie like presents herself now as like a WWE executive, is that she brings joy to millions, where here it's kind of played ironically that he would say that. So I thought that was funny. So he says she brings joy to millions and he wants a moment of silence for her. So they cut all the lights, and on the Tron, we get this really funny, like sad, pouty picture of Stephanie that's just like frozen on the Tron for like 10 seconds. And so, of course, the crowd does not buy into this. They do the exact opposite of what he asked them to do, and they constantly scream because while he wants a moment of silence, and that Kurt says he's going to beat respect into the crowd. Okay, so the promo's not over. What did you think about this first part of it with Kurt?
I thought the moment of silence part was hilarious. Yeah, And back to what you were saying earlier about the what chants with the crowd. I believe at one point they were chanting, they were still chanting "You suck" after the his entrance music cut off, and then they were one half of the crowd was saying "You suck," and the other half was saying "What," and then they would just go back and forth and back and forth. So I thought that was really funny, and of course Kurt being the whiny little psychopath that he is sometimes, always a good time.
Yeah, it was like he was presenting as if she had like died, like with the moment of silence and the picture on the Tron. It was good stuff. So to follow this up, Vince comes out and he says that Triple H seduced, humiliated, and beat his daughter, which for sure one of those is true, because in that match we saw on Raw, he definitely beat her. I guess he humiliated her, whether you think, but I thought the seduced was a funny, like, it's like a classic Vince, like really dramatic way of putting it.
And I think Cole at some point during this says she deserved to be beaten or something like that. And yeah, I said that probably wouldn't go over too well in this day and age.
Yeah, there's a lot of sketchy stuff on commentary where it's like she's a heel, so they're like, no, it's fine if you. It's like, yeah, I don't know if that means she needs to be beaten. Probably not too kosher. But so Vince calls him an SOB, and so Triple H comes out to address them. He says Vince ain't seen nothing yet if he thinks he's an SOB. And so Triple H keeps doing this like snarling voice thing that I thought was a little awkward at times, like, which he, I know he's kind of known for doing that, but it's just, it's kind of weird. It's almost like a little bit too much at times, like making his voice like super, I don't know how to put it, like
gravelly and deep.
Yeah. And so
trying to sound like a Steph guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so he honors Stephanie's last moments by replaying the spinebuster that he won the match with, which again is kind of weird because the crowd's all cheering for this as he just lays her out. Kurt gets mad and says he wants a match. Vince says he wants in too. And so this sets up a handicap match at first between those two and Triple H. But then Nate comes out and says that he used to party here all night long in Philadelphia. And he's wooing the whole time, and he progressively gets more and more jacked up until he finally throws his coat off and he says that he wants to team up with Triple H to get his hands on Vince. I really love Flair here. I thought he was awesome, kind of escalating his energy and like going. I felt like in the last episode he was real reserved as like professional GM Ric Flair, and here we get kind of you know fired up, insane Ric Flair throwing the coat and everything. So I thought this is a pretty good angle to set up the match later, and this seems like a pretty fun match on paper. And my only thing with this is I thought it was a little bit long, like it was probably about 15 minutes or so. I thought they maybe could have trimmed it down a little bit because it's just kind of a long time, and all these people are obviously really talented and are really good on the mic, but I just think 15 minutes is maybe just a little bit too long for like an opening out in the ring promo. They maybe could have got the same thing accomplished in a little bit less time, but overall pretty good, I think.
Yeah, Flair kind of did the styling, profiling kind of thing. I kind of wanted to see him drop the elbow on his suit jacket, but I'll get over that one, I guess. But Flair definitely showed a little bit more fire in this episode, but I do feel like he kind of rambled at points. He could have just kind of made the match and got on with it, and you know, kind of insulted Vince a little bit, but it was a good segment overall. You know, Kurt and Vince and Triple H and Flair are all extremely talented guys, like you said. Good opening segment.
Yeah, which kind of, and this is a common thing for them, is to set up, you know, a big match for later, to come out with a big promo to set up a match later in the night. Absolutely. And so, yeah, and so we cut to the Dudleys in the locker room, who are kind of melancholy due to being drafted to different shows. Devon says if they can win the titles, they can stay together. And so they're establishing this angle because they're going to get a title shot tonight on SmackDown. Because if you get the titles, you get to stay together. So if they can win, they will get to stay together, which I thought was a really interesting way to play this on this match. It creates a little bit of drama. We are in Philadelphia, which they mention in this kind of promo that, you know, this is kind of their ECW stomping grounds. They run over all the titles that they've won. So I thought this is a good angle for the show to kind of put some drama behind this, that like maybe they're not going to be split up after all if they can come in and win the titles. What did you think about this Dudley Boyz promo?
Yeah, I mean, it always it definitely gives it a little bit more story to it, and gives it a little bit more stakes. The match, it, not only that are there for the titles, but they get to stay together if they win. Yeah, I really liked the fact that it was in Philly, and that they kind of played that up, and that's where they got together and started the team, and that they had so much success in that town. So, but yeah, it was a good little promo, and definitely gave some good stakes to this match coming up.
Yeah, so it's hard to say because we kind of already know, because them splitting up is pretty famous. But did you feel like they had a chance to win this?
Maybe a little bit, just because it was in Philly, and maybe maybe get the ECW pop there. But I kind of felt like they wanted to go in a different direction just to try and see if they could get something out of it.
Yeah, and it's like you mentioned too. So if Billy and Chuck lose, like, what do they do with them? Like, did they have a plan for them too? So that would kind of muck things up a little bit. So they're really hyping the stakes for this match. So it's Billy and Chuck versus the Dudleys for the tag team titles. Billy and Chuck have Rico with them. So there's a lot of back and forth, and the Dudleys start to get the upper hand. They get a visual pin, but Rico distracts the ref. And so in a really, I don't know, dumb moment, Devon, because Rico's distracting the ref, decides to chase Rico to the back like an idiot, leaving Bubba by himself. Billy sneaks a Famouser when he's not the legal man. I think he wasn't the legal man. He hits a Famouser to get the pin, and that is the end of the Dudleys. I really liked the energy to start, but I thought the finish with Devon running out was really lame, and I didn't think made a lot of sense given the story going in. I just thought there were I think even if they break them up, I think there's a better way to do it. I thought it would have felt so much bigger if they gave this a little bit more time. And even if you have Rico screw them, I didn't like the idea of Devon running to the back. It just, I feel like it made him look like a complete moron. Like, because they just had this promo in the back about like, look, this is our shot. Like, this is our only chance to stay together. And he decides that it's worth chasing Rico completely backstage because he distracted the ref. To me, it didn't make any sense. It seems like Devon would have at least a little bit more sense than that, than just completely bail and leave Bubba by himself considering the stakes. I really would have wished, even if they were still going to break him up, give it a little more time and have them have a hard fought loss, or have Rico distract, but not in this way. Like, they cost in the match after, you know, kind of a little bit of a better match that would get us a little more emotionally invested, maybe have a few more spots where we think the Dudleys are going to win. I just felt like they kind of, they didn't do as much as they could have with the story of this, of the Dudleys breaking up in this match. So I went 1.75 stars for the match itself, but I really didn't like the execution.
Yeah, I feel like they should have been like super desperate to try and win this match, just pulled out anything that they could, maybe even cheated a little bit, even though they were faces. But, you know, they should have just been extremely desperate. And it is very stupid that he chased him to the back, because, like, you're basically leaving your partner out there to get murdered. I mean, they could have fought him for 21 minutes, and Devon may not have come back if he never caught Rico, I guess. But, yeah, this definitely could have used a little bit more time, and I definitely think that Dudley should have been a little bit more desperate to win this match at all costs, just so, you know, they could stay together and they could continue to rule the tag team division and all that. But
or like, even if they're going to lose, I just think you, because the thing is, you're breaking them up. So you want to get what you can out of breaking them up, because they're a really established team. They, you know, it's hard to imagine them not being each other. So if you're going to split them up, you want to milk it for what you can get out of it. You want to make it a moment. And to me, they didn't really do it. Now, they give them this whole thing where obviously they get to come back. Devon comes back out. And after the match is over, they do all their signature spots, like the what's up and the 3D. And they get the tables and all, which is fine. You know, it gets everybody to get them to see them doing their signature stuff again. But again, it's like, I don't think they got the emotion that they could have got out of it. They didn't make it a moment of, like, you know, their last hurrah and, like, getting the crowd really invested in them breaking up. So,
and even if that's what you're trying to do, that makes you want to see them do it again, because makes you want to see them do more 3Ds and do more 3Ds through the table and stuff like that. So, I mean, even if you were trying to get them one last hurrah, I would like to see them continue to do that. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, let them go out upset so we, like, feel bad for them, so we have some kind of, you know, stake in this, where it's like, they just come out and do their stuff, so they seem okay. They seem happy because they're just putting people through tables. But anyway, also, Bubba's eye looked, when he was walking out, I don't know if this happened during this match, but his eye looked fucked. Like, he had, like, his eye was, like, super red.
I think he had, like, a mild shiner before the match, but I think it got worse somewhere along the way.
All right. Anyway, so we cut backstage and we see the APA playing cards in their normal setup with the Budweisers and the pile of money on the table and the Stogies. They're reminiscing as they are another tag team that's going to be split up due to the draft. So they kind of talk about how, you know, they're going to make the best of it. They're going to do what they always do. They kind of reminisce about their previous times together and what they've done as a team. And so they decide the best way they can go out is to have a one last final party. So they call in Tajiri and Tori, who are paired up at this time, and they send Tajiri on a beer run, and they persuade Tori to stay to play strip poker. What'd you think of this?
And all Bradshaw wants Tori to do is to take her panties off. Not anything else, just her panties. no, I mean, these barroom little APA office segments were always hilarious and a good time.
Yeah, and we'll get into it more, because this is something we're going to keep coming back to throughout this entire show. But I really felt that they did a really good job of getting me invested in this APA breakup. Like, I thought they did a really good job when it's them kind of talking about the times they had, and that, like, they can't believe that this is going to be, you know, this is how they go out, that they're being forced to split up and they're going to have to close the APA. Like, I really thought they did a really good job of, like, making it feel important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where these two go during this brand extension, kind of see where Bradshaw goes on Raw and how they use Farouk on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. All right. So still backstage. Now we cut to Matt Hardy and Lita, who are basically talking about how they are happy that they get to steal together, that the draft did not break them up. They're both a little awkward in the mic, I found. Not super natural.
It always kind of stays that way. That's kind of
Hardy. Yeah. But Jericho comes out to crap on them, and that he's livid he's on SmackDown and that he is not the champ. Matt calls him a has-been, and so Jericho attacks him. And so this will kind of set up a match for later tonight between those two.
Yeah, this was a good little backstage little spat just to kind of get Jericho and Hardy involved in the show.
Yeah. And just to kind of let us know that Jericho is a SmackDown guy, because he was not in the original draft. And I mean, this is still 2002, and they posted the lottery picks online, but this is not like 2020 where everybody's checking everything online. So I would imagine there's probably a decent amount of people watching this that had no idea how the rest of the, you know, the remaining 20 picks or whatever went after Raw went off the air. So it kind of reminds everybody of that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay, so next up we have Rock talking with Hogan backstage. So they're definitely starting to establish that Hogan and Rock are kind of buddy-buddy through this, because this is the second time we see them backstage together. We get some funny, typical Rock impressions as he's running down all of Hogan's previous opponents, like Bundy and Kamala, and he does some really great Bundy and Kamala impressions. He vouches for Kane because they're kind of discussing, can they trust Kane? Is Kane somebody who they're going to be able to work with? And then Kane shows up and does his own impression of Hogan and Rock. This is a funny segment. I thought Kane did really well doing his Hogan and Rock impression. It was a nice change of pace for Kane. Just kind of like a typical thing that they would do with Rock a lot, where they have Rock bring out the kind of funny side of somebody that you don't normally see sort of more funny comedy stuff from. But it was fine. It kind of gave a chance to kind of build some face heat for this team that we're going to see later in the night.
Yeah, this is one of those all-time kind of backstage promos that you'll see in all those funniest promo videos of all time, because Kane does the crazy impression and talks about his fans being the Canaanites and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true, the Canaanites.
He talks about the Hulkamaniacs and the millions and millions and then his Canaanites. So, yeah, this is one of those promos that you'll see in all those kind of YouTube videos of like funny, hilarious promos. So I thought it was fairly solid.
Yeah. And he nailed it too. Kane really nailed the, he was a natural. He hung with him. Like he hung with Rock as far as the goofiness.
Oh, absolutely.
Nice. And so that is our next match is Kane, Rock, and Hogan versus the NWO. In a sad moment, if you watch this on the network, the Hogan dub is not the greatest thing you ever hear. It's like a weird ripoff Voodoo Child song that is not fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, Rock is crazy over. And as they're doing the entrances, we get the kind of the quick as they do mid-show. And we already did the Tobacco is Wacko, but another huge one at the time that they plug here is Stacker 2. Get used to hearing about Stacker 2.
Stacker 2 was a permanent fixture on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown during this time.
Oh, man. They plug Hungry Man Dinners, too, on this, which is, I remember being, like, I was, like, 13 at this time or something, and I just thought it made it seem like the greatest thing, even though it was basically just a bigger TV dinner.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to say this earlier, but Castrol GTX is bringing us backlash during the month, so.
Oh, yeah.
That's the sponsor for the next pay-per-view.
I know. All these sponsors are so, like, ingrained into my psyche, like, for my entire life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I actually saw some Snacker 2 the other day, and I was like, they still make that shit?
Yeah. It seems like it would have been banned by now for having something illegal in it.
Something like that.
Yeah. So the NWO comes out, and they just, like we mentioned on Raw, they just seem cooked to me. Like, to me, the NWO, especially when you have this star team like Rock and Hogan and even Kane, they just seem like they are nowhere on the same level as the team they're facing. And they just kind of seem like three guys. Like you don't see any real personality out of, you know, Hall and Nash or anything. Honestly, the one who seems to have the most personality is X-Pac now, which is not what you want from the NWO. So X-Pac and Rock start. I think X-Pac looks kind of strange in the briefs, too. I'm so used to seeing him in, like, you know, a singlet or something. It's weird to see him in, like, the tights like that. But anyway.
Yeah, he didn't even wear those in WCW, did they? Did he?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he still rocked the singlet, or at least the long pants. Yeah, the long tights. It's weird to see him. He's a real skinny guy to be wearing the short tights like that, I find.
Yeah.
But, So they hit the hot tag to Hogan. We get an X-Pac sucks chant thrown in there. They basically do what we saw kind of on Raw where Hogan's in peril. The NWO are kind of working him over. Then Kane gets the hot tag. Kane blocks the Bronco Buster, choke slams X-Pac for the win. This is kind of not that far removed from what we saw on the Raw tag with the NWO. I thought this was a little bit better because I thought they did a little bit more with the face and peril sequences and built the drama a little bit more. And I thought the NWO looked a little more cohesive in this one, like keeping the NWO, keeping Hogan in the corner and stuff. And I thought the face team had a lot of energy. And again, I think this was a solid tag match, but the NWO, they just have no presence or importance to me. They don't come off as feeling like they have any kind of like gravity to them, but I went 2.5 for the match. But again, I think the NWO seems pretty cooked.
I went 2.5 as well. The match started out with Rock and Hall, and I said it was the two best working punches of all time going face to face because those two always had really solid working punches. Yeah, like you said, they beat up on Hogan, just, you know, kind of do the whole heat segment. I really thought the crowd was really into this match the whole time it was going on, and I think Kane finishing off the match really got the crowd hyped up, and I thought this one was a little bit better than the one on Raw, and I kind of thought this was the best match of the night.
Yeah.
All right. Definitely so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I thought Kane looked good. This is kind of I think this is a hot period for Kane. I think you could argue that this kind of the time a little bit before this and this period is probably what I would probably consider Kane's prime.
Oh, yeah, he was jacked at this point, mm-hmm. too. You know, yeah. once he changes the mask, he kind of loses a little bit of muscle mass. So, and then obviously he takes the mask off at some point in the I think it's about a year from this point.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. So next up, we'll have the match that was established backstage earlier with Jericho versus Matt Hardy. There was really nothing to this. Matt comes in hot, but he pretty much immediately gets put in the walls of Jericho and taps. I win a star on this one because, I mean, that's pretty much all that happened in the match. I mean, I feel like this match was like a minute or something. It was very, very quick.
Yeah, there hadn't been much over about 2 minutes in these two shows. Yeah. I went a star as well. At one point, King says she doesn't see what Lita sees in Matt. She said you'd need an x-ray to see something in him or something to that effect. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty much just punch and kick, and then he locked him in the walls of Jericho, and he tapped. And then after the match, Jericho put Lita in the walls of Jericho. Was another thing that I took note of.
Yeah, just to put more heat on Jericho, and I guess just to show how he's still pissed off, and I think he's just taking it out on them. And again, we see that they're really not afraid at this point to do like men on women stuff, like men on women violence at this point, because I mean, he really puts her in the walls and locks it in.
Yeah. No doubt.
All right. No doubt. So we get to our next segment, which is back to the APA. And so they're continuing with their strip poker game. And to kind of tease them, Tori has to take off a piece of clothing, but she's wearing this kind of, I guess, like waist chain thing, accessory. And so they're thinking she's going to take off her pants, but instead she just takes off the chain. I'm not really sure what happened with Christian, but he throws like this insane tantrum where he's like beating the table. I mean, it was like extended. I feel like it was like 10 to 15 seconds of Christian just screaming and like slamming the table. I guess he had like it was because he was like one away from a royal flush or something like that, right?
Yeah. And I believe during his feud with DDP, he kind of had like a little temper tantrum gimmick, so I think he was just still trying to kind of play that up. I don't know if it kind of dies after this, but yeah, I think he was still just trying to kind of play that up. But yeah, he almost had like he was one card away from a royal flush or something like that. So yeah, he was pissed.
But this is enjoyable silliness so far. These cuts back to the APA, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I always love those. The barroom table kind of segments that the APA had.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. So we have our IC champ, RVD, is coming out to face Test. I'm having my notes that Test was extremely moist. He was had quite the oil job going. He was shimmering. So this was a really weird match because the whole thing was about like, so Test gets mad at Earl Hebner because like he caught him like using the ropes for leverage, and so he stopped the count, and so Test gets mad and pushes him, and in this like really like weird spot, Earl like does like a high kick and like kicks Edge in the face, not Edge, Test hits him in the face, and so Test gets really he gets really mad, and then RVD hits a sunset flipped, and then Earl does a fast count, and RVD wins. So really the whole story of the match is this drama between Test and Earl Hebner, which I'm not really sure like if this was something that is just confined to this match or this is something that is building from some previous heat they had. But I went one star because it really wasn't much of a match besides all the shenanigans between Earl Hebner and Test, which was kind of odd.
Yeah, I went one star as well. they were really playing up the fact that Test had immunity in his contract, which I believe he had won in some kind of battle royal at Survivor Series the previous year. They had like an immunity battle royal or something to that effect. So he was just really trying to play up the effect that he could kind of get away with whatever he wanted to do.
It's true, but yeah.
Yeah, Hebner's just he's the worst ref. I meant to point that out earlier during the triple threat, because Jericho brings the belt and a chair in at the same time, and he only takes the chair away, leaving Jericho with the belt to completely turn his back and give the chair back to whoever, and Jericho decks Triple H with the belt. So, yeah Hebner's the worst.
Yeah, especially for being the senior ref. He should maybe get his shit together, maybe.
For sure, for sure.
All right, but yeah, just kind of a weird match, but anyway. Keep rolling. Coaches backstage with Raven, who says he doesn't care who he wrestles. His goal is to get the hardcore title. He gives an Oscar Wilde quote about how we destroy the things we love, and the things we love destroy us. He says passion has brought Maven success, but will be his downfall. This was just kind of typical Raven promo, giving kind of like dark, ominous quotes and being brooding and moody.
Moody Raven. Yeah. I never really got the whole Raven thing, but I'm just kind of cultured, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's by this point he's not given enough to really do, you know, like what he did in ECW or anything. So he's like too low in the card to really get over his Raven thing. So he can't get over the whole character. So he just has to confine it to these very short snippets where you can't really get fully into what it's supposed to be. But, all right. So we have the match next. This is for the hardcore title, Maven versus Raven for the hardcore title. Maven is always interesting to me because like you could tell they want him to be something because he's the first tough enough winner, but you could tell quickly that they're kind of in a rut with him because they don't know what else to do with this character now that he's, you know, okay, he's a rookie. He's come from Tough Enough, but where do you go with that after? And so this whole match was just like basic hardcore spots. They hit each other with, you know, various weapons because Raven brings out the shopping cart with all the plunder. So pretty much all the goodies, the plunder, baby. And so they just kind of hit each other with trash cans, that sort of thing for a few minutes. There was a weird spot where Maven like wipes out where he's like on the top rope and he falls on the apron and slips completely out of the ring. And like King cracks up laughing at him.
You fucked up chant on that one.
Yeah. Which maybe I'm probably giving him too much of a benefit of the doubt, but I didn't know like if that could have maybe been planned because they're trying to play it as a rookie, but I'm probably giving him too much credit. He probably just botched it.
Yeah, I think you probably give him a little too much credit.
Yeah.
you can tell that they want to do something with Maven, but you know, putting him in the hardcore division probably wasn't the best thing for him because it's not something he can really showcase his talents doing because it's just a lot of quick matches, and sometimes the matches don't even. Or the match that starts isn't even the match that it ends up being. And somebody comes in and pins somebody else, and they just end up running all over the building.
Yeah. And so this Tommy Dreamer comes out. He wrecks Maven because we still have the 24/7 rule going. So Dreamer's thinking that he's going to take advantage and win the title for himself. But Raven hits the Raven effect for the win. Again, not much to this. Raven wins the title. I gave this a half a star.
I gave it half a star as well, yeah. And like I said, you know, you could tell that they really wanted to do something with Maven, like you said. And it just being in the hardcore division wasn't going to do it for him. And maybe if they had built something going out of this, it really could have saved him. And maybe if he had started to go in towards the Intercontinental Championship or something to that effect, it could have helped him out. But I don't think they're really going to go anywhere with him after this.
And so Vince is pissed off because the hardcore title is going to head to Raw, so he loses one of his titles. And you could tell that they're really starting to turn the titles into kind of bargaining chips. Not bargaining chips, but kind of like, you know, that's something that the GMs want on their show is going to be the titles.
Absolutely.
And so we cut back. There's a quick time where they ran down the lottery picks, which we kind of already did earlier. So we really don't need to get into that. So we cut back again to the APA having their farewell party. Hurricane passes out. William Regal shows up and in a classic Regal line, he says he calls the women there a few lowly tarts. And he says that all the men are the other lowlifes. And an incredible Regal line. I really love the lowly tarts. It's such a classic Regal, like, English dickhead line.
I'm sad he didn't call the guys the filthy pillocks or whatever he used to call everybody.
Love them. So they get pissed off and they throw Regal across the table, and it basically breaks down to a huge bar fight because they say they want to come out the same way they came in, which is with a bar brawl. Again, this is a pretty fun angle, and I thought it was really emotional because this is kind of like where they do their sort of last farewell as a team and close the little frame door that they have that connects to no walls that they always put up. But in a weird way, I thought they got more emotion out of this breakup than they did with the Dudleys one, because I feel like you really got invested in them, and it was kind of cool to see them have their last like beer drinking party. And I think both of them, Farouk and Bradshaw, sold it pretty well, like the emotion of it. Like, they weren't melodramatic about it, but it seemed exactly how you would think APA would go out. Like, you know, like they're bar buddies and they have their last hurrah and then they're out. But I don't know. I thought it was kind of weirdly emotional. I thought it was a pretty good angle throughout the show.
Yeah, they definitely got the emotion going with the "sorry, we're closed" on the door when mm-hmm. as they walked out. And yeah, they built it pretty well, and they went out with a blaze of glory with the one last bar brawl. But yeah, they were really well done segments throughout the night.
Yeah, I like the way they put that all together. All right. So with that, we go to our main event, which is going to be the tag with Angle and McMahon against Triple H and Flair. Vince comes out, and he is jacked as always. And King says that Vince is tanned and virile, which is
oh, wow.
And then on the other side, he shits on Flair, saying he has no tan. Flair's in dress pants, which I really like that aspect of this whole thing, because I feel like they were really getting across like Flair did not come to wrestle tonight. Because he doesn't see himself as a wrestler. He just get caught up in the moment. And so he has to wrestle in his dress clothes because he just got hyped up and had to get in the match. So I really like that they sent him out here like in the dress pants, because I think it really sold like that he jumped in at the last moment. And like we said in the last episode, Triple H looks great. He looks like a stud at this point.
Yeah, I liked how they kind of played up. Flair was so agitated and emotional that he threw himself in the match without even having the intentions of wrestling that night. Before the match started, I had the thought of that Flair in his prime and Angle in his prime would have been like an absolute 5-star classic. Man. That would have been a, you know, like 80s Flair versus like this period Angle would have been, or maybe even like a few years in the future Angle would have been an absolute barn burner.
Amazing. Yeah. So at the beginning of the match, they switch a lot as to who's going to start this, and they finally settle that Flair's going to start off with Angle, kind of hinting at what you said. Like that's a cool thing to see, even though obviously Flair, this is not prime Flair, but just to see those two in the ring is pretty cool. And so the whole thing of this match is not too far off from what we saw with the NWO tag matches, is that so Flair kind of plays the face and peril for this, especially they play up like his lack of gear. And I thought him, like, he loses his shoes at one point, which I think only added to like building the sympathy on him. And they keep on cutting. So I thought they built the heat a lot more than they did with Hogan in the NWO matches, because they really draw this out where his comeback, he keeps on trying to get the tag to Triple H, and he keeps getting cut off. And like I said, I think him losing the shoes and stuff just built the sympathy on him more. And also I like the heat because you just want to see him get a hold of Vince, because throughout the match, Vince is very arrogant. He keeps trying to screw with him. Vince tries to do the figure four. And I kind of liked how they had Vince sort of going above himself as a wrestler to try and mock Flair, and it kind of backfires on him. Like, he goes for the figure four and it just gets reversed, because obviously, you know, Flair can reverse a figure four and Vince, because he's the master of it, which I thought was a cool touch. And so with Vince trolling him the whole match, finally Flair finally gets a hold of Vince, but then Taker runs in to wreck Flair when the referee is distracted and Vince gets the pin. I thought this was a really fun tag match. I thought it had some nice heat, and I thought they built up, like usual, you want to see Vince, because he's so conniving and so like dastardly. You want to see him get his comeuppance, and I thought they built it well through the match. And you're so close to Flair really getting in on him, but it gets cut off by Taker at the end. But I still thought this was good, and I thought it was fun to see Vince in more of like a traditional kind of tag match, because I think you're used to seeing Vince in these kind of wild, insane, like weapons and crazy brawls. It was fun to see Vince work a kind of pretty traditional style tag match for the most part. But I thought this was pretty fun. These guys are all pretty good at this. Triple H and Angle are very good at just this sort of thing. I went 3 stars on this one.
I went 2.5 stars on this one. Yeah, like you said, it's always good to see Vince get his ass kicked and kind of play the smarmy little asshole trying to get away from everything. I thought he looked very muscle and fitness in this match. He was very yes. jacked and oiled up. He looked like he was about to be on the magazine cover. At one point, Flair low blows Vince and just completely gets away with it. He just kicks him straight in the nuts. But yeah, this was a very solid tag team match and a good main event for the first SmackDown of this era of the show. And I just thought this was a really solid main event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're definitely establishing this so far since the draft with Raw and now wrapping up the SmackDown, that this is kind of the biggest angle we have right now, is the Vince and Flair as the two GMs, and then Angle is kind of like, you know, Vince's boy, and then Triple H is kind of maybe not as close with Flair, but like just de facto he's going to team with Flair because he's the face. So it's kind of setting up that the biggest angle we have so far with this draft is definitely Vince and Flair for sure.
Absolutely.
And so, all right. So overall thoughts on this one. I thought this definitely felt like a filler episode for the most part, because we didn't have anything too much of consequence happen, even though I really did like the main event. I thought it was a really solid main event. Besides the two tag matches, the singles matches we saw were really worth anything, just mostly forgettable stuff. I mean, we did get a title change, but the hardcore title changes hands pretty frequently, so that's nothing really too notable. I thought the draft split up angles were the tag split up angles were hit and miss. I thought the APA one was well done. The Dudleys, I think, kind of left me one more. But I felt this whole show is just to kind of a holdover until they really get the brand split going on the next Raw, where people are really going to be confined to their shows. But I think for what it was, I think it was decent. Like, again, they weren't going to do too much, because they had to wait until the draft went into effect. So I went kind of right down the middle on this one, 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I went 6 out of 10 on this one. Yeah, mm-hmm. like you said, it's kind of a filler episode, but most of the singles matches not really doing too much, and there wasn't too much storyline progression. And like you said, with the Dudleys, that was a big miss in my opinion. I really mm-hmm. think that they could have done that a lot better, and you know, they really just needed to have this episode just to kind of end this era and start a brand new next week. And but I think they did a fairly solid job. Had a couple mm-hmm. really good tag team matches. So not a great episode, but fairly solid.
Yeah, and it's kind of if you think, like you mentioned, the Dudleys match. I think if you make that something that's a little more, I think then you start getting into like a really, like, very good to great episode. If you can get that Dudley's match to be very good and then have a little bit better execution of that breakup, I think you're looking at a much better episode. But
absolutely.
All right. So we're through that. So let's do some awards and we'll wrap it up. Okay. So, For best match, I have the one we just, the main event from SmackDown, Angle McMahon versus Flair and Hunter.
I went NWO Hogan Rock Kane from SmackDown.
Solid pick. Okay. Best moment, I have when Stephanie gets escorted out after losing the triple threat.
I went Rock getting the Penn State crowd to chant, "You are an asshole," at Vince.
That is a good one. All right. Least valuable player. So I put the NWO because, I mean, I think obviously we had some more lackluster performances here. But just as far as the spot that they're given and just having, to me, not much of a presence, I think they were least valuable to me.
I actually went with Flair on this one because his draft strategy just confused me on Raw, and you know he actually took the pin on the in the tag match, so I have to give it to Flair even though I kind of don't want to.
Yeah, makes sense. So best show I have of the two, SmackDown or Raw, I went SmackDown.
I went Raw just purely for the fact that it had the draft. But, I mean, I think wrestling-wise, SmackDown was a little better, but having the draft makes Raw just a little bit better.
Yeah, it depends on how you look at it. If you look at it, like, I think if you just want something to put on and watch, I'd probably lean SmackDown. But for sure, the novelty of the draft, I mean, it's hard to compete with.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so we're going to do – so something we're going to do in these episodes is kind of do a top five sort of – kind of in the vein of like the old WCW top 10, except we're going to keep it to only five. So for my number one, I have Triple H the champion. Who you got number one, Logan?
I got Kurt Angle at number one.
Kurt Angle, solid pick. All right. Number two, I have The Rock. Who you had number two?
I went Rock as well.
Rock, okay. Three, I have Angle. Who's your number one? Who do you have number three?
I have Kane at number three because I just really thought he took advantage of his opportunities.
Yeah. He had a good showing. Absolutely. That's a solid pick. I agree. Four, I had Jericho.
I had Hogan at number four because I thought him and The Rock kind of had two solid nights together.
Sure. And then five, I could be cheating with this a little bit because he didn't really wrestle per se, but I went Brock just because I think he's continuing to be built well.
I put Triple H because he had mm-hmm. two very solid showings as well, mm-hmm. And he, you know, he's the champ, so I had to slide him on there somewhere.
Makes sense, but for the most part, we're pretty. I mean, our order's a little different, but you know, it's obvious. Rock, Angle, Triple H are your, and then Hogan is obviously on the rise right now too after his performance at Mania.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so. All right. I think this has been, we had a lot to get through on this episode, this first episode, Logan, but I think we did a pretty good job. Before we, yeah. Before we go, I just want to go over a few things about the, North South Connection Podcast Network. If you want to subscribe, just go on Apple Podbean, search North South Podcast. North South Connection Podcast, and you'll be able to find it. Check out the Facebook page as well to keep updated on when shows are being released. Ton of stuff coming out each week, multiple days per week, ton of content coming out. Check out JT's Twitter too, JT Pod Guy on Twitter. I am, to plug myself, I am Jambalaya_Jake on Twitter. And I want to thank them for, so this is my first episode of this, and I want to thank JT and Chad for asking me to do this one, because I think it's going to be fun. And thank you, Logan, for kind of throwing the idea out there.
Yeah, you stole my idea, man. I'm just playing.
Sorry.
I'm just playing. But yeah, okay. I'm more than willing to be on any episode when you have every need.
Absolutely.
Because, like I said, this is kind of my hot spot. So
you're obviously knowledgeable. And so... North South Podcast, North South Connect. I keep saying North South Podcast. North South Connection Podcast. Shows as Extreme Three Way Dance, Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling. Me and JT have been doing some GWCW Pod Blast, where we kind of live watch a match that we think has a decent shot of making our GWCW list? Logan, you've been watching for your GWCW list lately?
Yeah, I've watched here and there. I definitely need to get more into it, just kind of start constructing my list. But I've watched a few things here and there, but probably need to hit it a little harder coming up in the next couple months.
Yeah, it's at least a little less intimidating than the WWF stuff because there's just not as much to watch. But I'm with you. I have to do a lot of research because I'm just a little bit less familiar with everything, but it's been fun so far.
Yeah. And with WCW, it's a lot with me. It's a lot watching in hindsight because I barely caught the very end of WCW. So,
for sure.
Live at least. So a lot of it's in hindsight. So some of the stuff that might mean a lot to a lot of other people might not mean as much to me in certain situations.
Absolutely. All right. But as always, check out the North South Connection podcast. Tons of great stuff coming out every week. Logan, you have anything? So I know you normally do campus hot takes, but right now that's got to be put on hiatus because all the campuses are closed.
Yeah. Hopefully everything will be figured out by then, so me and Scott can fire that back up. I don't know. Yeah, I've been pretty dead on the sport college sports area. So
yeah, it's for sure.
I usually have a March Madness. I'm usually part of the March Madness preview, and then college baseball would have the Omaha College World Series. So that's kind of out of it for me. So, but I have a Twitter, Rhino8293. If anybody wants to follow me there.
All right, Logan. Well, I think if we go through this entire era, I think I probably have at least about 200 more episodes left. So I'm sure I will have you back sooner than later.
I'll definitely be here, man. I had a great time.
All right. Sounds good. So that will wrap the first episode. All right. So this has been some aggression with no Ruth.
Tell me why.